What is up, sports fans? This is Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm sure, as many of you already know, all of our favorite sporting events have been shut down due to the 2020 novel coronavirus, or COVID-19. But there's still news to talk about. As we said in our last week's episode, we're still going to try to talk about whatever's coming up that we can. So we're here, and JVZ has brought us some things. So I'm King Kaz. JVZ is here, as always, the man with the stories. What's up, BZ?
This is the show for the sheltered in place sports fan now. Thankfully, we've operated entirely online, so we three have never been in the same room at the same time, so business as usual for us. Business as usual also for Thomas Werner, who is the lone story in our roundup. This Norwegian man won the 2020 Iditarod.
Yeah, the old dog sledding.
This race started on March 8th before all this stuff happened, and ended very recently. But it took him 9 days, 10 hours, 37 minutes to travel the 1,000 miles all the way from Anchorage, Alaska to Nome, Alaska. And he won this thing on just a second attempt. So he got $50,000 and a pickup truck for his prize, and came back to a world where all sports were shut down.
That's just gotta be weird, right? Because I'm sure somehow, some way, they hear things on these like long trail trips, but it's just gotta be weird to come back to like prepare for this thing, to go do this thing, and then come back to the world being very, very different than when you left it, to go, you know, put yourself in peril in doing the Iditarod, because it is what still like kind of one of the most big dangerous things that we do as humans.
I would kind of think it was my fault. Like, it's like you left to go do this thing, and then because you did this thing, now everything else is gone. It's like a movie. That's basically the he does have his dogs to keep him company. He's social distancing from everybody else. The sport started before, and now it's the last one to finish. And
yeah, they did say they told people to not fly in to Nome for the finish of the race, because Nome, like most other places, like Anchorage, after this race had started, had shut down all public buildings and things like that to kind of follow public safety concerns and things. So yeah, it's definitely just like kind of a very weird thing to leave in such fanfare and show up to none at all. It's a very interesting kind of thing to look at. I would love to hear more of these people's thoughts who have gone off to do these kind of things, you know, and come back to a very, very different world. All right. But yeah, so Werner wins a pickup truck, $50,000. Richer will help him buy a lot of hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
And toilet paper. But in other news, we do have some NFL stuff to talk about. There have been a lot of moves. A lot of shakeups and like kind of a lot of things still yet to happen while people are under quarantine and all these things are going on. I think the big one that we just kind of have to get out of the way is Tom Brady.
Yeah, our good old boy Touchdown Tom is mm-hmm. now no longer a New England Patriot. He is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer and will be for the next 2 years. Because it is a fully guaranteed contract for $50 million. I believe he can't be traded. He can't be franchise tagged at the end of it. So he very clearly intends on playing the entirety of this contract and also years after that. So, he is powering through, and it is the end of an era. It is, he said he wants to play till he's 45 at least, and he's going for it.
I have a hot take, and I'm borrowing this from the Twitterverse and some of the ESPN analysts, and I would even love DJM's input on this before we run down the rest of some of these changes that have happened.
Keep in mind before you say this that nobody had anything else to talk about this week. So
this is true.
Hear these takes, they may not be, seem so hot.
For you, as a football fan, and I asked this question to DJM as well, does anything but a championship in one of these 2 years tarnish the legacy of Tom Brady? Or does it not matter and he'll always just be remembered as one of the greatest Patriot players to ever play for that organization and to play the game of football?
I will say that's not where the line is. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the line is at least like playoffs, because the Buccaneers have a pretty good wide receiver core. So he's got more weapons to throw to than he did in New England, at least the last couple years. You know, I mean, they were desperate. They tried to get Antonio Brown to come in. They did bring him in and then let him go.
Let him show us off the door, as we like to say. Business.
A lot of teams were not willing to experiment with that because they didn't need to. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't need to. And you know, they had a quarterback that threw for 5,000 yards last year. And, a lot of that was the wide receivers. And maybe if the quarterback hadn't thrown to the other team 30 times, you know, who knows how far that team would have gone. It's while Tom Brady's performance last year, I think at least as far as some of the aggregate quarterbacking stats or the efficiency stats are actually pretty similar to Jameis Winston last year. He might be a more of a calming presence. Or maybe more of a veteran leader than Jameis Winston was. So I think at the very least, if he doesn't do better than Jameis Winston did, then that's going to look pretty bad.
I
don't think it's going to ruin.
Let's pace this, right? 5 years, 10 years down the line, when we're talking about Tom Brady going into the Hall of Fame, do these 2 years matter?
Well, if you say it that way, then of course they don't matter. It's kind of like he already is a Hall of Famer. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These years in Tampa Bay won't affect anything. Did Joe Montana actually maybe not doing as good as he did in San Francisco or Kansas City affect him getting into the Hall of Fame? Of course it didn't. Brett Favre is that year in Minnesota, which I think he actually made the playoffs, or that year for the New York Jets, is that going to affect him going into the Hall of Fame as a Green Bay Packer?
For me, it maybe does.
Well, you're wrong.
Don't play for the Jets. What's wrong?
You're wrong.
Well, okay, so that 1 year with the Jets was bad, but he was able to redeem that with a couple better years with the Vikings.
All this would do is help his legacy, because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Tom Brady as their starting quarterback are not going to go 0-16. But if they were to somehow make the playoffs or maybe win a playoff game or two or even make it to the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship game, it would further cement Tom Brady's legacy. It can only help him at this point.
Okay. All right, so let's run. What's up?
I do think it's fitting that Tom Brady's last pass as a New England Patriot was a pick six in the playoffs. And then Jameis Winston's last pass as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer was a pick six at the end of the season to secure 30 for 30. So,
you're saying Tom Brady should get LASIK surgery?
Yes. Yes.
And Tom Brady needs to be out there with a walker at this point. I love him, but he's getting up there.
He's going to do it, Cass. He's going to do it.
He's going to go for 45.
He is. I've been saying it. I'm convinced he's going to
throw 45 touchdowns.
No, I said the whole time. This is the greatest ploy ever for him to sell TB12. Like once he is done, he doesn't go behind a desk. He doesn't do any of that. He becomes the infomercial god for TB12. He starts a whole Instagram revolution. He gets all these fitness influencers to follow TB12, the TB12 method, and like it's just going to become a thing, and it's going to get gross.
Good.
Like 30,
good.
30 years from now, it's going to be like George Foreman, where everybody knows them for the product they're selling more than the sport that they played.
Mm-hmm. I could see it. Yeah. Like if people out here, fucking TB12, man, I'm down for TB12. And you're like, wait, did you know who Tom Brady actually was? He's the guy who made TB12. Like, okay, never mind. But let's go through some of these other people who have made some changes. So DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver, traded for running back David Johnson, second round pick. How do we feel about this?
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you remember who David Johnson plays?
Hot take. All right.
What's your take?
Bill O'Brien, head coach and general manager of the Houston Texans, should be investigated for malpractice and conspiracy for what he did to the Houston Texans.
Yes.
I'm thinking Bill Belichick let him go get another job to destroy another franchise. That's what I think.
Yeah, and you called attention to the earlier in the week to the fact that, and you've done it before on this show, but basically everybody who used to work for Bill Belichick, I guess with the exception of Mike Vrabel at this point, but everybody who used to work
player,
for Bill Belichick.
A player, a coach under Belichick.
Yeah, everybody has sucked. I can't think of a single coordinator under Belichick that actually didn't flame out after a couple of years. And Bill O'Brien somehow managed to fail his way, not just into a head coaching job, or not just into a continued head coaching job, but into being the general manager as well. And so DeAndre Hopkins apparently didn't get along with Bill O'Brien, the coach. So he got traded for peanuts by Bill O'Brien, the general manager.
Yeah, the Texans, and also giving up a second round pick and a fourth round pick in 2021
for David Johnson.
The fourth round pick is going along with Hopkins. They're getting back a second round pick and a they're getting back a second round pick this year and a fourth round pick
in 2021.
And so David Johnson is an Arizona Cardinal. you might remember him from fantasy football seasons in I believe 2016 was kind of his breakout year, and then since then he's been riddled with injuries.
Maybe they're looking at the time frame. Maybe this is the key, right? They're like, hey, got the coronavirus out there. All football's done for right now. He's going to have even more time, even though we were already in our offseason, to heal up.
Yeah, DJM brings up the quote-unquote change of scenery.
Hashtag change of scenery.
It's like, this is not a guarantee thing. I mean, I fall into this trap all the time, too. Like, I always think, like, somebody's not doing so well, and, you know, maybe a change of scenery would do them good. Maybe the system is the problem. But I feel like the offense was not the problem in Arizona. In fact, you know, in Arizona, that's an up-and-coming team with Kyler Murray as the quarterback. They did pretty well last year as a 49er fan. I think their games against the Cardinals were some of their scarier games all season. Like the Seahawks played them tough. The Cardinals played them tough. Yeah, David Johnson wasn't necessarily a part of that. He was just frequently injured, but I don't know. Maybe Bill O'Brien sees something in him. Regardless of what he did see him, he is not worth DeAndre Hopkins, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Also, one of the few top wide receivers in the NFL to not have a massive ego. So it's kind of weird if you're feuding with somebody like that, and really dumb to give up somebody like that, especially when you've got your franchise quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and you want to avoid pissing him off, because if I were him, I would be very pissed off to see my best weapon traded away for a guy who hasn't been productive in the last 3 years.
JVZ, and this is happening here locally for me. It is this coach who came from New England, who thinks that he can rule with an iron fist, and if players speak up, he can just ship them out. It happened with Matt Patricia and Darius Slay. It happened with Quandre Diggs last year. It is happening now with Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins. This coach who believes that they can pretend to be Bill Belichick tries to do this. Players don't like it. And suddenly there's a trade. It's happening in Detroit. I'm watching it firsthand. Either Bill O'Brien is just completely incompetent, which is entirely possible if you look at a lot of coaches and GMs in this league. He might just be completely incompetent. Or this is him trying to do the it's my way or the highway thing, pretending he's Belichick.
Yeah, there's a reason why the combination coach and general manager is rare. And this is why. I know it's hard to sometimes find two people that are very opinionated about how a team should be run, and and get them to be in sync with each other, or at least get them to be long term in sync with each other. Maybe something works for a couple years and then things fall apart as people start playing the blame game when things don't go so well. But I don't know, like Bill O'Brien didn't do anything as a head coach to warrant his promotion to general manager, but somehow he has all this power now and he's wielding it. And if you give somebody that shouldn't have that much power to begin with, or power, this is kind of what happens. And the Houston Texans did not have a first round pick this year, and DeAndre Hopkins was worth at least a first round pick. There are a lot of teams that were baffled, laughed their asses off when they heard about this trade. And there are a lot of other teams that are mad because they would have given up more to get him and just didn't have the opportunity to. This was a bad, bad trade.
Do you believe it to be just incompetence or O'Brien being stubborn? Which one do you believe it to be?
I mean, I'd argue those two are the same thing. I think I'm glad you asked the question of whether it was malpractice,
in regards to Bill O'Brien making this trade just because he doesn't know any better, or just making this trade to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins?
Oh, I think it's the latter. Like, he definitely made the trade just to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins, but accepting this bad of a return for it, it just makes it even worse. And it's just that's that's dumb, and it's dumb enough that you should ask the question about whether he's doing, about whether he's ruining the Texans on purpose, even though I don't believe it to be true, but it's bad enough that that question should be asked, even if the answer is no.
Yeah,
it's just bad. It's bad. It's mind blowing. It's and it's not the first bad decision that he's made, both as a coach and as a general manager. So, yeah, I mean, Texas fans wanted him out before.
I would believe that he's just he's just monstrously incompetent over. Yeah. Malicious intent, malpractice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I believe so, I mean, too. But gotta ask.
I don't think this is going to be one of those things that we solve in one episode here. I think it is definitely something that deserves more and more discussion going into the future about why someone like Bill O'Brien does constantly get these not only jobs but promotions in slew of clearly being kind of incompetent and bad at his job. But I definitely, I think you both made really fair points as to, like, just somebody who doesn't deserve to be in the position that they're in and is constantly given more and more keys to the reins of these things, and doesn't show the results of it. So, but we have a lot of moves to talk about. So we're going to kind of keep going down this list real quick. Philip Rivers, a well-known QB, he is going to be going to the Indianapolis Colts for 1 year for the price of $25 million. Is that a good fit? I'm going to say no. I think there are a hell of a lot better options than Philip Rivers out there, and I feel like they could have did a better job in securing somebody to fill that position.
I think Philip Rivers has been quietly okay in Los Angeles the last couple of years.
Yeah, so but I think is quietly okay. Okay, quietly okay does not ratify good, and I think you want good.
These guys were
DJ Evans last year he was not even okay.
This does seem like, you know, this is one last rodeo for Philip Rivers, and the hope is a change of scenery will kind of reinvigorate the Philip Rivers of a couple years before.
I'm gonna as we go through this, I'm gonna jump down the line a little bit, right? Because as we're kind of on Philip Rivers right now, I do want to bring up the fact that you do have names of guys who are looking for jobs, and I am pretty much okay with most of these names in here over Philip Rivers, except for maybe Jameis Winston, right? Like I'm not gonna drop all of them, but you know, Jameis Winston's maybe the only one that I wouldn't look at before I would look at Philip Rivers.
At Jameis Winston because he can look downfield now and he can see what he's throwing to. So
okay, all right, fair point. Cornerback Darius Slay is going to be going to the Eagles for a third. That's what I said. Corner. Darius Slay is going to be going to the Eagles for a third and fifth round pick from this year. You have a what the fuck tag in here.
Yeah, well, I mean, as DJ mentioned earlier, like one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Also just kind of a good, still young player. And you know, these are the kind of guys who you build your team around.
He was universally agreed upon as the Lions' best defensive player for the last few years. He's made a Pro Bowl. He's 29, going on 30 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out recently that there were some issues between Darius Slay and head coach Matt Patricia. And the trade was made. And it kind of came out recently that it was not very good. And only getting a third and fifth rounder for a proven top 10 cornerback in the league, that goes to Bob Quinn, general manager of the Lions, who also came from the New England Patriots. So just copy-paste all of the things I said about Bill O'Brien and just put them with Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn.
And it's two people fucking up this time. It really does seem like Bill Belichick, part of his success is just unleashing his disciples on the league to just fuck things up for everybody.
Is there a possibility, right, that in this third and fifth round pick, there is a cover corner out there that is coming up that I know we don't follow like here on Sports Dozen, and we are not the best at following kind of the college upbringing, except for like the big names out there, like most of you are. But I think you have to kind of keep in hindsight that part of these guys' jobs is to.
I will say this, Kaz, to answer your original question, there is a top five prospect at corner that pretty much everyone in their mother is projecting the Lions to draft, and that's Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State. Okay. He even tweeted the idea of playing with Darius Slay would have been amazing. But I guess that's not going to happen. So, yeah, right. It's almost certain that's who they're drafting.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a possibility that you get somebody in any round of the draft. There's a greater possibility that you get somebody good earlier on in the draft. Those guys are less risky, but you got to pay those guys a little bit more initially, but that's not a big deal. Rookie salaries are capped a little bit.
The Eagles did actually sign and extend Darius Slay.
Yeah. So part of it is a money thing. Some of these guys, when they get traded, there's a contract extension as part of the deal. So because of that, it's sometimes it's like, we don't want to pay this guy. We'll trade them to somebody who will. And that's the case for the next person on this list, DeForest Buckner. He's a pretty good defensive tackle for the 49ers this year on their famed defensive line that was so successful this year. The team has to figure out how to continue to move forward as all these players who had good seasons last year now want to get paid. And
he's going to be going to the Colts.
Yeah. So as part of that trade, they got a first round pick back for him. But he's getting a massive extension to anchor the Colts defensive line. So this kind of works out for everybody. The 49ers get a pick to use to try to replace him. Or they can try to rely on some of the guys they currently have on that line to pick up the slack. It sucks to come up short of a Super Bowl and then lose pieces. They hope they can make the right moves to make another run at it this year, and or at least have long-term success instead of just flame out after 1 year of success. So, but you know, they got a first round pick back for him, so that's more than what Houston got back for DeAndre Hopkins, and they got that for defensive tackle, somebody that they can at least make a good attempt at replacing.
All right, moving on down the line. Yeah, our boy Nick Foles is going to be a Chicago Bear. They're going to be getting in return a 2020 fourth round pick. What do we think about Nick Foles going to the Bears?
This is a massive indictment on Mitchell Trubisky, the guy that... they had the third pick in the draft several years ago behind the 49ers at number two. They somehow traded with the 49ers to move up from number three to number two to draft Mitchell Trubisky. The 49ers still got the guy they wanted anyways. Less than 10 picks later, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson were drafted. So this was a very puzzling move at the time, but it was a move that signified that they were very serious about Mitchell Trubisky and how good he was. And then he did have a Pro Bowl year 2 years ago. He was kind of an alternate, but I think that says more about the quarterback play in the NFC than it does about the skill of Mitchell Trubisky. He was not very good last year, and I think he took a lot of the blame for the Bears' struggles. So, it seems like they're giving up on him if they're trading for another quarterback, even though Nick Foles is a backup quarterback. He was being paid to be a starter in Jacksonville, and they decided to move on from him because Gardner Minshew did so well in his absence. And Nick Foles has a new team. If Mitchell Trubisky does manage to start and can make it most of the season and get injured, then Nick Foles might come in and lead them to a Super Bowl.
So DJM marks Nick Foles as the greatest journeyman of all time. I don't know if I would make him the greatest, but he has been a very good journeyman throughout his career and the multiple teams he has played for.
Okay, Kaz, what if he does it again? Many journeyman quarterbacks that have played for seven or eight different teams have gone all the way and be Super Bowl MVP? I think that puts Nick Foles in the top of the top of journeyman quarterbacks. And if he can do it again, say Mitchell Trubisky after six games, the Bears finally just yank him, and then Nick Foles takes them all the way again.
That's the Tom Brady Cinderella story. I think as far as quarterbacks go, he's up there. He's probably the only journeyman player that will ever have a statue erected in one of the cities that he's played for. So I think he's certainly the journeyman with the greatest story of all time. It's like, it doesn't matter where he goes. I remember talking about this for Jacksonville, and what if he comes back and what if he leads them to the playoffs and the Super Bowl? And it didn't happen, but this is what's going to happen everywhere he goes, is this question is going to be asked.
What if
he does it again? And that's how good of a story it was the first time, and that's how good of a performance it was, because now we all know that he's capable of doing that wherever he goes. And he took down Tom Brady and the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and he didn't just rely on a great defense to do it or anything else. Like, he led that team, and he lit. I mean, he was on fire that postseason. He had an Eli Manning type of postseason.
Shut up.
So he's Eli Manning's not on the list of quarterbacks available. He's retired. Teddy Bridgewater is a Carolina Panther now. He signed for 3 years, $63 million.
Pretty good.
Pretty good for a quarterback who was kind of a backup this year, but Bridgewater has been injured quite a bit throughout his career, and so never really took off as a starter. But I think everybody's always seen potential in him. So hopefully this works out. He's going to be replacing Kyle Allen, but who was replacing Cam Newton? Cam Newton is still on the roster, so I think the Carolina Panthers are going to try to trade him to somebody else. So he's on our list of available quarterbacks at this point. But who knows whether any team is going to want to give up anything in a trade for him. It's been a while since Cam Newton played, so it's so there are questions, and there are a lot of other available quarterbacks that might be a little less risky.
The other thing, before we get into extensions, I do want to just kind of give, I think, just in the classification of the person who wins the offseason, I think at the moment it's Todd Gurley.
I would say so too. I think some people are remarking on the fact that he was cut, and maybe that, you know, reflects poorly on him, but I think this reflects on his on how intelligent it was for him to get as much guaranteed money as he could. He signed one of the biggest contracts a running back had signed in terms of guaranteed money. This was the contract that basically told guys like Le'Veon Bell and told guys like Ezekiel Elliott that you need to hold out for as much guaranteed money as possible, because you have no idea when your career is going to take a slide. You have no idea when, even if your career hasn't taken that much of a slide, there's no idea of when your coach is going to decide that they don't want to play you as much as they used to. You have no idea when you're going to turn into David Johnson, basically. And
you guys really took me around for that one. I had no idea where you were going with that when you said Todd Gurley won free agency. It was, I actually did a double take, but that was really good.
He had $37.5 million in guaranteed money that he signed originally. So this year I think he's getting paid $17.25 million of that from the Rams, who cut him. And I think it's going to count as like $20 million of dead money on their cap. He's, I don't want to say healthy, because it's a bad sign when when a team decides that they don't want to pay you $20 million or that they're willing to pay $20 million to you to not play for them. But that didn't stop him from signing with the Falcons for another $6 million. So he's getting paid by two teams this year. And maybe a change of scenery with the Falcons does him a little good. He's going to be replacing Devontae Freeman, who is released. Basically, the running backs, after their first contract, they're kind of expendable. You get used up easily. Somebody like Derrick Henry, who has been franchise tagged, that's the smart way to go about. And I say smart in quotation marks, because it is probably the most fiscally prudent way to handle running backs nowadays. I think it sucks as kind of a person who is pro player and you know, wants players to be treated well, and not like expendable, you know, commodities. I mean, that said, they are getting paid a lot of money, but the you know, it does, you know, some of these guys get used up, and then some of these running backs, they you know, they have to carry the ball, you know, or touch the ball 300, 400 times a year. And it is one of the positions that gets the most beat up out of any position. You know, like quarterbacks touch the ball a lot, but they have an entire offensive line designed to protect them and make sure that they don't get touched by the other team. Running backs, you hand them the ball and they run straight into the other team. And, you know, and that results in a lot of abuse and a lot of mileage after those first couple years. And so if you have a great performance those first couple years, especially if it's, you know, after you get handed the ball 400 times a year, that's the time you need to hold out and get as much money as you can. Le'Veon Bell did it, and it cost him an entire season but he managed to find another team that was willing to give him that money. And Ezekiel Elliott forced the issue, and he got a ton of money from his own team. So those guys, if they follow the same pattern, they're going to fall off a cliff the next couple of years, and they're going to, you know, they're going to run away with all that guaranteed money. And I'd say that money is deserved because they got underpaid for all those years leading up to it. I'm looking at guys like Derrick Henry. He's getting franchise tagged this year, which means he's going to get roughly a 1-year contract, which is worth the average of the top five running backs. That's the rules for the franchise tag. But this is a 1-year deal, so they can keep franchise tagging him until he does fall off that cliff, and then they can decide, okay, yeah, we don't want to pay you a long term contract anymore. That's kind of the smart way to handle your workhorse running backs now, and which also makes it especially dumb to trade for one like David Johnson when they have all these kind of guys that everybody else has given up on, when you could have gotten a Todd Gurley off a free agency for $6 million, which is significantly less than what he was getting paid before. So unfortunately these guys are expendable. If you have a good offensive line that is good at run blocking, you can kind of plug in whoever you want. Like the 49ers had three different running backs this year that were fantastic, but nobody had really ever heard of them before this year. And they just kind of kept swapping those guys in and out. These guys are unfortunately expendable. So if you're a guy like Christian McCaffrey, you should be looking at this, and you should see that this is what's going to happen. So you got to get your money now before you turn it now.
All right, let's move through a few more of these extensions and then into some other stuff that we need to talk about. Just kind of real quickly. So Ryan Tannehill will be extending his contract 4 years, $118 million, $62 million guaranteed, $92 million if he's on the roster by day five of the 2021 season.
Yeah, this is a massive amount of money for a guy who I think they brought him in here into Tennessee to back up Marcus Mariota, who didn't do quite so well. So the Titans finally gave up on Mariota, plugged Tannehill in, and then they went on an absolute tear, which took them all the way to, took them to the playoffs, took them past Lamar Jackson, past the Patriots, they couldn't quite make it past the eventual Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, but that's a tremendous run, and one that I don't think that the Titans expected to go on. So I think this contract is part reward for that, and part, deciding that, being happy with Ryan Tannehill and deciding that he's your guy going forward. He was a guy who actually did benefit from a change of scenery. Wasn't doing so hot in Miami, had a couple injuries. I think he always kind of had a couple fans that, that always believed in him, but I guess just didn't show enough for the front office to believe in him, and got an opportunity somewhere else and took it and ran with it. Now he's running all the way to the bank with $62 million at signing. So if he sucks for the rest of this, he still has $62 million. So that was a great job by him and his agent to get this money now. And we'll see whether he lives up to it.
All right, moving on from there. Kirk Cousins, 2 years, $66 million, $61 million guaranteed. I think that's a pretty good deal for Kirk Cousins, who is a pretty good quarterback, I would say. going down the line, talking about more franchise tags, we have Dak Prescott, who has an exclusive franchise tag, $33 million.
I think he very famously wants $40 million a year for a long-term extension, so I don't think he's going to be that happy with this $33 million. That $33 million is kind of where we expect the franchise tag mark to be for quarterbacks. If Patrick Mahomes signs a big contract extension this year, that might push that, you know, that average of the top five salaries for the position, that might push that number up. So we're expecting it to be around $33 million. The exclusive part of that exclusive franchise tag means he's not allowed to negotiate with any other teams for a long-term contract during this 10-year or during this 1-year period. Just a 1-year extension for Dak Prescott, and then he's back on the market after that, or the Cowboys hope they can sign him to a longer term deal. Drew Brees, 2 years, $50 million. So we thought he might retire, but he decided not to. So we'll probably play for another 2 years. It seems like $25 million a year is now the going rate for a veteran quarterback, for reference, the NFL salary cap is, and this is a hard cap, you can't go over this for any reason, is $198.2 million. So roughly 12% of that is going to be spent on your quarterback at minimum. Even if he's a guy like Phillip Rivers that you sign from another team and hope that they're going to, that a change of scenery is going to do them good. So that's the going rate for quarterbacks now. And then, you know, keep that in mind as we get to our list of who's available. But one of the other big name extensions is AJ Green getting a franchise tag, wide receiver AJ Green. I think this is kind of important for the Bengals to lock him down at least for another year. He's going to get paid $18.5 million for this year, don't have a quarterback, but they will probably be drafting Joe Burrow number one overall. So this gives him at least a weapon to throw to, one that has a little bit of continuity with the coaching staff, who I don't know if they've been fired or not, but he's still a weapon. He's had a lot of injury problems, but you know, bring him back for another year and let's see where this goes. As far as quarterbacks who still don't have a team, I think the notable names on that list are Cam Newton, even though he is still technically on the roster, he's kind of available for trade. Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, kind of the quiet name nobody's really talking about, and Joe Flacco, who I don't think anybody wants at this point.
I think unfortunately Flacco has kind of put himself in a position where he's run his course. Maybe he gets a redemption song somewhere, but I don't know when or where that could be or how that would work. He'd probably most likely get signed as a backup and then kind of, you know,
play out his days that way. But he is still former Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco, so he will always have that going for him. As far as teams that actually still need a quarterback, that we could plug maybe guys from this list into, we've got the New England Patriots for the first time in a long time. We've got the LA Chargers, where Phillip Rivers came from, although it seems like they might be trying to run with Tyrod Taylor. The Miami Dolphins, they were probably rolling with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Washington, Jacksonville, Cincinnati, and Denver. Jacksonville's probably sticking with Gardner Minshew. Cincinnati's getting Joe Burrow. So it's kind of a short list of teams that are still looking for a quarterback, and maybe some of those guys don't want to pay $25 million for Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, or Joe Flacco. Maybe they'll just end up drafting one. Miami's probably drafting Tua Tagovailoa. So it's, you know, I Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton. Where are those guys going?
I don't know, man. Like, that's
Cam Newton maybe I goes mean, to Washington for to play for his former coach. I really want to see the Jameis Winston, Bill Belichick experiment. I want to see what a good what being under the Patriots umbrella does for a guy who now has 2020 vision and even without 2020 vision managed to throw for 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns.
Yeah. I think there's still a lot of moves to be made. Some of these might be weird, but I could see a possibility where the Browns might look to pick up Andy Dalton or somebody like that. I could see Cam Newton, and I know we just said the Miami might draft is most likely going to draft, but I could see Miami looking to Cam Newton as a guy and then still drafting because Cam is just kind of unreliable in his injuries and things like that. But maybe somebody right now that could maybe a little bit give your future something to see. And then Flacco, I don't know. I think he, I don't know, I Washington maybe, weirdly, or Cincinnati.
Andy Dalton is famously the quote unquote Dalton line is the line of if your quarterback is better than Andy Dalton, you keep him. If your quarterback is worse than Andy Dalton, you get rid of them. If your quarterback is Andy Dalton, you got to ask yourself that question every year. But he's always been competent. So he is a guy that actually is worth that, you know, throw $25 million at this guy for a year and see what happens. And he's probably worth that experiment. So, you know, you're going to get at least a competent quarterback out of it. You know, before his horrific injury, Alex Smith was that guy. So if you want a Dalton line level quarterback, there's nobody better than Andy Dalton himself. So maybe that's the kind of guy that gets plugged in at New England and Bill Belichick gets to show that he can turn this average quarterback into a superstar. And it wasn't just Tom Brady carrying him. It was Bill Belichick carrying Tom Brady. Or maybe if he does that with a guy like Jameis Winston, then that's even better. DJM is hoping that the Buccaneers and the Patriots both go 8-8 and nobody can draw any conclusions from any of this.
That's the greatest thing, right? That's kind of everybody's dream right there.
Yeah. And then we'll be talking about how good was Tom Brady really, you know, many years into his retirement.
God, if they both make the playoffs, I'm done.
All right.
I just want to put that out there.
While you're watching Daniel Jones be quarterback for the New York Giants,
let's not talk about that.
Maybe they should.
I think they're gonna, if anything, and this will be my last thing about football, we'll move on to the CBA after this. I think if anything for the Giants, they're probably gonna give him another year to really see what he can do, kind of thing.
We talked about this earlier, but
yeah,
some of these guys do get given up on a little too early. It's like if you're not Patrick Mahomes in your second season, if you're not Lamar Jackson in your second season or Deshaun Watson at this point, you're kind of trash. Those guys set really high expectations. And I think that's more about how good those guys were, how unbelievably good those guys were in so early on in their careers. Actually, Carson Wentz before that had an MVP season before he got hurt and before Nick Foles took that team to a Super Bowl. So it's, you know, high expectations early on for quarterbacks. And maybe part of that is because if you are a good quarterback early on, you get paid massive amounts of money. You get these, you know, $25, $30 million a year contracts now that you have to get paid. So if you're not showing that early on, maybe it's time to just get rid of the guy and try again for somebody else who might be worth that amount of money. Yeah. But I guess now moving on to the more pure business side of the sport, there is the collective bargaining agreement was ratified by the players. This was extremely close. It was a margin of 60 votes from the roughly 2,000 players, 1,019 votes to 959 votes, 51.5% majority of out of all the players in the NFL voted to ratify this deal. And it's, you know, they better hope they like it because this deal is lasting until the 2030 season. So 11 it's years,
10 years.
I think it's going to take effect almost immediately. Not the 17 game season part. The owners have until 2023 to implement that. And then I don't know whether the additional playoff team is tied to that. So like we might be seeing 17 playoffs this year or 7 teams per conference this year. A couple restrictions on international games. And then some players are getting paid more, but you know, the 17 games, they are absolutely steadfast against that for a long time. It was going to take a massive amount of concessions in favor of the players in order to get them to agree to that. So part of that is the player revenue share bumps up from 47% to 48%. That 1% might seem like not a lot, but then when you factor in how much money the NFL brings in, just the absolute juggernaut that it is, one of the most, or if not the most profitable sport in the entire world. It is 1% is a massive amount of money to divvy up among the players. A lot of that is going, and that's going to bump up to 48.5% once they add that 17th game to the season. But for now, it's a 1% increase. The minimum salary has been raised 20%. I believe 60% of the contracts in the NFL are minimum salaries. So a lot of people are getting raises. And I think that's like the biggest part of why this deal eventually was ratified. There were a lot of all-star Pro Bowl level players speaking out on Twitter about why they were voting no on this. There was a lot of public infighting among players, and that was not necessarily a good look for the players union, because they definitely did not seem unified once kind of all the details of this plan were made public. Like you had a lot of guys, a lot of stars saying that they don't want this deal, and then a lot of guys who are lesser known saying like, hey, this is really going to help us. This raises the floor for everybody. This might not do so well for the people at the very top, but for the people at the very bottom, which makes up the majority of the league, this is going to help out a lot. The minimum salary is now $675,000. And by the year 2030, that's going to slowly scale up to $1.185 million. So the worst player on the roster in the NFL by the year 2030 will be a millionaire. That's pretty good, I think, mm-hmm. for concessions. And then if you are a 7-year veteran, the minimum is $1.05 million now. And then that'll scale up to $1.48 million by 2030.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of good things in here. I am still wary of the 17 game season. We have kind of put that out there.
I think that's the biggest sticking point for the Stars, because if they, I mean, that's just more potential for injury for them. And when, as we've kind of discussed, when a star gets injured, they have a lot more money to lose out on their next contract. So it's, you know, it does make it more risky for them. Even though they are going to get paid more, all salaries are scaling up by 1/17 whenever they do go to the 17-game season. That's the risk, and that's why we kind of have this divide between the really, really good players and the players that nobody really hears about. There's 53 players on an NFL roster now. That's actually going to go up to 55, but you know, like we said, like 12% of that salary cap money goes towards paying the quarterback, but most of that roster is made up of these guys that are making minimum contracts. It's going to be a slightly bigger pot to divvy up the money from. But also more of that pot has to go towards, the guys that you fill out this 55 man roster with.
Yeah. And I think I enjoy some of these, veteran benefits and benefits for retired player things and things like that.
Fewer practices during training camp.
Fewer practices. Practice time is limited, which I never knew that to begin with. So practice time was padded practice time was 3 hours. Now it's down to 2.5, and the number is limited from 28 to 16.
I think, which we get the idea of football practice being like kind of. I think we kind of get the impression as fans that they're practicing like every day in pads. And that's just not the case. Like the sport is way too punishing for that. And you know, they spend most of the week trying to recover from the game that they just
I understood it just because of working out and how those things work. Yeah. You generally have your ramp up. So you kind of, earlier you're doing lighter work that you know puts your body in the position to do the heavier work that you're going to do later in the week, which is probably for them playing a game. You have your workout days that are hitting weights, your route running days, which are, you know, your tape studying days, and then your full padded, you know, kind of get your body in line and ready for the game kind of days. But I feel like this now puts teams in a position where they kind of have to move people in and out of certain days to do things. You know what I mean? Like maybe you have a group of guys who are working out, doing padded work one day while other guys are studying tape another day kind of thing. I don't know. That's the only thing I can really think.
Yeah. But yeah, there's. So it's going to be easier on the body to play football at this point, to try to make up for the fact that we're adding a 17th game to the season. So that's part of what helped the players decide that, okay, maybe a 17th game isn't so bad. If we're going to remove preseason games, we're going to make training camp a little bit easier. Then maybe there's that'll decrease the chance of injury to counteract the fact that there's an increased chance of injury from extra games. If you do get hurt and you end up retiring, you get better pensions and benefits. You get a more lenient drug policy geared towards treatment. So when your beat up body, when you're relying on painkillers to treat your beat up body and you get addicted to those, there, you're not going to get suspended. Or I guess, you know, if you decide to smoke weed to deal with that, you're not going to get suspended from that. For veterans, there's two players a team that can now up to $1.25 million of their contract does not count towards the salary cap for two players per team. So that's a little bit. Yeah, I think we'll see less of the old veterans getting cut from the team because of that. You can keep them around and they don't count as much towards the salary cap. Let's see. Roger Goodell lost a little bit of power from this. He doesn't get to be judge, jury, and executioner on everything anymore. There's just kind of neutral arbitration for, well, quote unquote, neutral arbitration. But at least somebody that is not Roger Goodell is going to be deciding punishments from now on. And then all fines across the board are going to be significantly reduced. This was a compromise, but as you can see from this list, there are a lot of little things that the players have been asking for a long time, that the players got in return for making the one big concession of a 17th game in the season. So, we'll see whether they end up hating this within the next 10 years. We have a long time to wait and see on this, but, it looks like, at the very least, the NFL is going to look a little bit differently now. The way contracts are going to be negotiated is going to be different. A 17th game is going to be different for, all of us. It's going to change fantasy football a little bit. A 17 playoff is going to be different. These CBAs, these collective bargaining agreements seem like little things, but they have the business aspect of this has ripple effects to all the way across the sport. So,
but
they are the ultimate wait and see.
Well, I don't think that's the ultimate wait and see, because the ultimate wait and see is called COVID-19 or the coronavirus. Because of this, we have put our basketball season on hold. Hockey has come to an abrupt end. We probably at some point are going to do an episode that is just about, the where we are and where do we think we're going to end up kind of things. But we do have to talk about where we are right now. In the early stages of what we are now calling a pandemic, and how everybody is coping with that. One of the big things, I think I've mentioned this before, and one of the first to kind of fall into that is League of Legends, the competitive game, esport, has decided to move most of its things to online. I said this is a thing that most esports can do. They can go to online qualifiers, online tournaments, and things like that. Even if you have players in player houses, you can have them quarantined together. You can have players play from their separate homes. You just have to up their internet connections if they don't have the greatest one, which is usually why people have player houses, because maybe people live in regions where they don't have access to really good internet.
And at the very least, the team is in sync with each other, even if they're not, if their connection is not so great.
You have things like Discord. You have things you can use like Mumble. Because even when you're sitting right next to each other, you still want that kind of being able to communicate without going, huh, what did he say down at the other end kind of thing. So even if you're not all in the same location, you have some kind of good level of communication thing that works online really well. Even if you are in all the same house, those things still work really well for you. Things like that. You can have people still referee the matches. You can have people still viewing and doing online services things from remote locations and things like that. So esports is probably going to be one of the things that thrives maybe from this pandemic to that sounds bad, but it's
good. I mean, it's an opportunity still watch for them. Mm-hmm. It took about a week for at least the North American League of Legends scene to transition from a stage show to an online show. I watched a little bit of it yesterday and it seemed to work pretty well. The casters had to rely on the in-game spectating client. So that's on like a 5-minute delay. So they were basically casting based off of what is effectively a recording at that point. But it's interactive. They can move the cameras around themselves and stuff. So like they overall, like they made it work, and
I don't want to
quite
I don't want to delve into the history of this, but this is probably something DJM will also be familiar with. But back in the day, when people would do competitive gaming things and esports things, your commentator was your in-game camera, right? You always watched from the commentator perspective or spectator perspective. And then as things kind of started to flourish, you would have somebody else do that while the commentator focused on commentating. I still have a love for the guys who did that first, because they know, they always kind of just have that intuitiveness to know where to look. And sometimes in certain games, like I think Overwatch is one of the ones that's kind of bad at it, having the separate people, but it just is kind of where we're at.
I think you're right. Like that, this is where esports started, where the competitive scene started. So we kind of just have to roll the technology back to that, in a way that, like, it's weird. Like, okay, we can't do this in person now. So let's make esports more electronic and go back to our roots with that. So even though you can't do this in studio, even though you can't have a big old stadium with all these people, like it's only going to take a week to transition this back into an entirely online thing. So it looks like it looked like we were going to be without any sports whatsoever for the foreseeable future. But it looks like esports getting themselves back together after a week, that's going to help with this complete lack of sports entertainment to watch. ESPN is bringing back the Ocho. Like, they're struggling for content right now. Unfortunately, that's happening as we're recording this, so I don't think listeners are going to be able to get an opportunity to watch unless you already have watched. The big three there. I don't know how I feel about this idea, but they are launching a quarantine tournament where they take 16 to 22 players who they test negative for COVID-19. They're going to stick them in a house in LA, build a basketball court on site, and make a reality show out of this whole thing.
So hold on. I know, look, DJM is trying to move us through this show so that we can make some kind of time frame. But let's talk about the logistics of this really quickly, right? You have to one, test the 16 to 22 players. You have to make sure that nothing...
That's already hard enough.
Right. You have to make sure that nothing that enters this house is contaminated.
Yes.
Right? It's going to be in California, which has... Some of the highest number of outbreaks in our country. You then have to make sure that nobody on your production crew has it.
Well, they're going to do the production crew offsite. So I think they're going to have to install like cameras around the house and then get the fuck out of there. And then it's just these people. Like you don't have camera people like going through the house carrying cameras at this point.
Okay. Yeah. I guess you go like Big Brother style or whatever the fuck. And then I guess you do remote production, but then you have to make sure but you still have to make sure none of those people have it, because if your production crew goes down, who's running the fucking cameras? Because I guess you can, you can hot swap and upload and then have somebody edit offsite as well. But then you have to have servers that can handle this and internet that can then upload, depending on the type of cameras you use. There's so much. My brain hurts.
Also, none of this, these people are not essential personnel. So with the shelter in place rules in California, I don't know. I mean, this idea came out before we had a statewide shelter in place order. So I don't think the quarantine basketball tournament counts as essential operations for the state of California. So I don't know whether this idea is viable anymore. But if it does happen, the actual sports side of this is, aside from the reality TV daily part of this, there's going to be seven rounds of three-on-three games, and the teammates are going to reshuffle with each game. And then once a player accumulates three losses, they get kicked out of the house. Also, if they break quarantine, they get kicked out of the house. So these are strange times. This is but this is Ice Cube trying to come up with a creative idea to deal with the fact that that we don't have sports for a while. He's still planning on starting the Big Three League on June 20th in Memphis, but maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe that doesn't happen because the NBA is back by that point in time and they're actually playing games in Memphis and they got to reschedule everything, maybe this shutdown lasts until longer than that. So we'll have to wait and see on that, just like with everything else. Formula One is doing, a special virtual Grand Prix for every race that they postpone this year, using their the 2019 F1 video game. So they're going to have some of their current drivers who want to participate. A lot of them are gamers. Them mm-hmm. racing against other guest celebrities, and so they're going to stream this for free on YouTube, Twitch, and their Facebook channel. But just something fun to do in this meantime, where you at least get to see some of these F1 personalities. Drone racing is now a thing, which, those guys.
I mean, drone racing has been a thing for a while.
Well, I mean, it's a thing, but now, as we can see for our next topic, there's a lot of opening for basically any sport to come in and gain a foothold. And one of the biggest one of the things seeing the biggest increase in viewership is Jelly's Marble Runs, which is a YouTube channel where a team of people now, a team of 11 people now, design these really intricate marble racing tracks. Not just racing, but like full-on Olympic style events. The Marble Olympics, as they used to be called, I think were kind of a staple for people on the Ocho subreddit. They actually made it as part of ESPN 8 the Ocho's annual production this year in August, or this past August, and also broadcasting today on ESPN. Just somebody just drops a bunch of marbles on a track and watches and sees which one finishes first. But there are incredible production values with this. And we've got the links in the show notes. You guys got to see this. I've actually been a fan of this for a couple years now. Big Green Ducks fan. It's this guy who started this, he started organizing these marbles into teams, partly by color, partly by other stuff. But like now all these teams kind of have a backstory to them. There's a whole kayfabe that goes along with this. The production values have skyrocketed. They're always trying out new events besides just races. The reason this went viral was because somebody posted one of those, day whatever of quarantine posts on Twitter. Day whatever without sports, marble racing is fun. And then they showed a big sand race where mm-hmm. somebody carved out a track in sand and then they dropped a couple marbles on there. And they have commentary for this. So mm-hmm. you can follow along. You can figure out which marble is which. Even if some of them are similar colors, this is taken completely seriously. You pretend that these marbles are actual people, even though this is somewhat random. And yes, you can bet on these. I think some of these are shown live on Twitch. And then you can bet on the live results. You obviously can't bet on the VODs, but yeah, the these it, it's you know, like they've got lap times, they've got marbles that they put in the stadium crowd to make it look like it's a full crowd. I think the Marble Olympics last year had like an opening and closing ceremony, done in like stop motion. They do like fancy replays, all these cool graphics. The Marbula One Racing League that they started this year has this fancy intro that looks a hell of a lot like the Formula One intro. A coach got fired during the Marble Olympics last year. Like this is there, like there's a whole backstory behind all of this. I mean, it's still like unscripted. Like this is all, it's all at the whim of gravity. So it's a little bit more random than actual sports. But if you want something that feels like sports during this time period, Jelly's Marble Runs is a great YouTube channel that you could lose hours in. You know, and then even after all the sports come back, you can root for your favorite marble team. You can buy merch. This is just a nice fun thing. And it was a nice fun thing even before all the other sports disappeared. But you know, now
something with more traction now that there aren't many other things going on.
Since that initial post went viral and made it to SportsCenter. I mean, this thing has been going on for a decade, but since mm-hmm. this past week, at least as of March 18th, there's like 1,000% increase in the number of subscribers to the channel, and you know, a nearly 340% increase in viewers on YouTube. So they are obviously marbles can't catch COVID-19, so they're going to keep doing this. And they will be around for to help us get through this dark period in sports. So
yeah,
and we'll be here to help you guys get through that as well. Yeah, DJM says they're to help us make sure we don't lose our marbles. just waiting for stuff to do. I'm surprised we actually managed to get a full show out of this week. Out of all the stuff this week.
And you guys then some, boys. Good job.
And and thank you to the NFL for continuing with their offseason. We'll play this by ear week by week and see what we can come up with in the meantime. And thank you guys for sticking with us. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com for links to marble racing and all the other stories that we talked about on this show. Hit us up on Twitter and tell us what your favorite Marble League teams are. Mine is the Green Ducks, as I mentioned before. But if you're a fan of the Raspberry Racers or the O-Rangers, let us know. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.